advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's been a slow summer week and
it's
very hot.
The dog days of summer.
Dog days of summer, but finally the debt talks are over.
Well, they didn't really do much of anything.
Our credit rating has been downgraded.
I know, isn't that great?
But fortunately, the internet is still running full steam ahead because it's been privatized.
Oh, well,
so
there you go.
So no problem. The internet does not depend on Congress or anyone. It operates in the private sector and doing quite well at that. Well, there's been quite a bit going on in the news. This week, there's, of course, the big security conference out in Las Vegas, Black Hat Conference and DEF CON, talking about all the threats. These are the white hat guys, actually, who are actually looking at security vulnerabilities and talking about them, and they've been just having fun doing that all week. Google is actually trying to go after Microsoft again. It's a pretty clever product about using their cloud to augment Microsoft Exchange Server. I'll talk about that a bit later.
Okay.
Now, AT&T and some of the phone companies are now changing their rules on password protection of your voicemail. You know, all of the rumple going on over in the UK with Rupert Murdoch's operations, you know, listening in on phone conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's talk that maybe some of the 9/11 survivors had their phones tapped. So now the phone companies are responding by changing the password rules, which certainly makes good sense. And the rule, and also the results were out this week on broadband advertising. Are we really getting the download and upload speeds that the vendors say we're getting? And the FCC went in there and checked it out, and they looked at it. I'm also going to feature one element from that Black Hat conference, and this is the vulnerabilities of devices that control infrastructure. Called SCADA devices. They control power plants. They control hydro dams. They control all kinds of things, and they're hooked to the internet and quite vulnerable. And it's one of the big problems that we've got in the country this year. Later in the show, we'll be featuring the man who started Real Networks. That, of course, was a way to send audio over the internet before MP3s became so popular, and then MP3s really sort of supplanted Real Networks, but the company's still going along producing products. And again, it was a heavy, heavy mailbag.
Oh, it always is.
Yes, indeed. Now it is time for...
I was waiting for the magic words.
Yes.
You threw me off today.
Okay, this was the thing. I was waiting till Mr. Big Voice came into the room. I knew he was in the next room drinking coffee.
Of course he was. He's having a camel and drinking some coffee. And I was waiting because you do it the same way every week.
I do it the same way every week. But, you know, I kind of just threw it off a bit. Also, I want to remind you before I get into this that I am monitoring the Tech Talk Radio Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got any comments about the show, just log on to Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/techtalkonline, and that will take, and then go to the wall, and that will take you right to the wall. I'm monitoring the wall to see if there are any comments that are happening during the show. We got an email from Ellen. Dear Tech Talk, how can I tell who owns a particular website? Thanks, Ellen. She's trying to find out. There must be a website that she doesn't like. She wants to find out who owns that website. Now, I think what you really mean is who owns the domain name. as opposed to who owns the website. And so you can find out domain name ownership by looking at the Whois database. Now, a good place to look this kind of data up is you can go to domaintools.com, www.domaintools.com. Just enter the domain name, and all the registry information there is provided. It gives you the contact information, their phone number, their address, and so you know then who is actually the owner of the domain name. Now, it turns out that most domain names that want to have their owners, that want to have their ownership masked from the public, have a third party sign up for the site. And the third party's name is there instead of the real domain name owner. So this is frequently done, and most ISPs will actually provide that service for you. So if you see just a standard ISP address, you know that the real owner's has been masked, and you can't really tell who owns it. We got an email from Ralph. Dear Dr. Schertz, my router is not accepting my password. How do I reset it? Thanks, Ralph. Okay, Ralph, I'm assuming that you've got a wireless router. You're trying to log onto the wireless router to reconfigure it, and the password that you thought was in there isn't working. Now, either somebody's hacked into your system and changed the password, or you've forgotten the password. And so the question is, how can you get into the router to fix it? Well, it's fairly easy to do. First of all, I would think you should just see if you can get it to work. Now, what you want to do when you log on to your router, you have to go to the internal IP address of the router. And most routers are at one or two internal IP addresses. It's either 192.168.1.1 or else 192.168.0.1. Those are the only... Those are two commonly used internal addresses. So you put in that IP address, and a screen will pop up asking you to log in. And you'll have to put in a username and a password. Try all the usernames that you can remember and passwords you can remember to make certain that you really can't get into it. And if you've discovered that you can't get into it, your only option then is to reset the router back to its default condition. Now, I would suggest that you download the manual for your router before you disable it.
Okay,
you see,
yeah.
Because you won't be hooked onto the internet until you get back on again.
Right.
So before you go in and reset it and get it all configured and maybe you won't have internet access, I suggest that you log on, look at your, you know, if you have a copy of your manual with you, that's fine. If you don't have it, you can always go on the internet, you can Google it, and you can find it and download a copy of the manual, because the manual is going to tell you the default login password and username. And if you don't have that, you're not going to be able to log on even after you reset it.
Right.
Now, then what you want to do, in the back of the router, there's a reset switch that you need to hold down. On some routers, you have to hold it down for up to 30 seconds.
Wow.
And it could either be a button that says reset, or there could be a little hole.
Like to push a pin in.
And you put like a paperclip in it.
Mm-hmm.
Paperclip works better than a pin, because a pin is like sharp at the end. Paperclip
flat at
the end.
Well, that way, if you stick a pin in there, then it stays in the hole, so the next time you reset it, you already got the pin there ready to go.
Yeah, I see.
That's my thinking.
I see.
Uh-huh, I'm here to help.
Well, okay, that's very good. Well, I tend to use the paperclip reset method, mm-hmm. but I suppose the pin would work, but you got to be certain that the pin doesn't slip off.
Right.
But I think you're probably more expert at resetting your router than I am.
I'm quite dexterous, I might say.
So once your router has been reset, you're going to use your default username and password. So, I mean, on some of the routers, it's just admin, or else it's admin username, admin password. Some are blank username and admin password, and they vary depending on the router. But you log into the system. The first thing you want to do is change the password, because everybody knows the default password for a router in its default condition, and people could try to hack into your system. So change the password to something you can remember. That's the key point, something you can remember. And then you write it down so this doesn't happen to you again.
Right.
Now, the second thing that you've got to do once you've done all of this, you've got to reconfigure your whole router, because not only did you reset the password back to the default values, you reset all of the internal settings. So you've got to set encryption up, because you don't want to run it unencrypted. So you'd have to set up encryption. So you go to encryption, and you can select WPA2, which would probably be the highest level of security that it would have. And then you've got to put in a key, a key which would be an encryption key, which is used for encrypting the password. And so the manual will show you exactly how to do that. So those are the two things you have to do to make certain that you are secure again: enable encryption and reset the password. And then you are set and ready to go. So you'll have no trouble if you have physical access to the router. You've got no trouble doing this reset. We got an email from Dominic. Dear Tech Talk, I have two iPads at home, an iPad 1 and an iPad 2, and I'd like to keep them synchronized. But I only have one iTunes account, and I don't want to get another one. And when you hook up the iPad, it wants to know your iPad account. What are my options? Thanks, Dominic. Also, I don't want to have to pay for an application twice if I want to put it on both iPads. I just want to pay for it once. Okay, Dominic, you are in luck. iTunes allows you to sync two devices to one iTunes account. So you can put your iPad 1 and your iPad 2, and you can synchronize it to that iTunes account, which is very convenient. Because if you buy an application for $4.99 and download it to one device, it automatically downloads to the other device, mm-hmm. and you only pay for it once.
Mm.
So that's very nice. So that's very convenient. It's one of the nice features that Apple did in their digital rights management. I'm actually surprised they did that, but it's certainly very convenient. Now, the one problem with this method, though, is that suppose you download a game, and the game is initially free, but then when you about halfway through playing it, they say, okay, if you want to finish the game, you now have to upgrade to pay for it. The upgrade doesn't go to both devices.
Of course.
So if you upgrade in one device, the other device also has to pay for the upgrade. So the key is, if you want to only pay for it once, make certain to only download games that are fully paid for before you download them, and don't have this intermediate upgrade step. We have an email from Alicia. Dear Dr. Schertz, I've been posting items to Wikipedia, and somebody else keeps posting to my article anonymously. Their posting only shows their IP address and not their name. Is there a way to find out who owns that IP address? Thanks, Alicia. I think she wants to find out, do they work for a company or something, or who's doing it? Well, actually, there is a way to track down who owns the IP address. You can use a lookup tool from the American Registry for Internet Numbers, ARIN, and their web address is http://whois.arin.net, whois.arin.net. And you go to the whois.arin.net, and you simply plug in the IP address you're looking for, and it will tell you who owns it. So if it's owned by a company, it'll tell you the company name. Now, if they're just simply going through an internet service provider, it just might say Verizon, and it will show you the block of IP addresses that they own. In that case, you can't tell exactly who's doing it, but you can tell who the carrier is. And if the company owns the block of IP addresses, you can tell the company where they work. We have an email from Tung. Dear Dr. Schertz, I added someone as a friend to my Facebook account by mistake. How can I remove them from my account?
How do you do that?
I've looked all over my Facebook page, and there's no way to unfriend them on my Facebook page. And I just want to get rid of them. I want to get them off the page. I don't know what to do. Love the show. Thanks, Tung. Well, here's the trick. The unfriend link is not on your page. It's on their page.
Really?
So you have to click on that friend's icon and go to their page. And then at the bottom of the page on the left-hand side, you'll see a link called unfriend. You click on that unfriend and then confirm it, and then they're gone.
How about that?
So you've been looking on the wrong page. You've been looking on your page instead of their page.
And that shows you how little I know about Facebook.
Now, that actually seems a little bit backwards to me.
It does.
But that's the way Facebook is.
The poor person is getting unfriended because they really didn't do anything wrong, you know?
They did. Now, here's the beauty of it. When you unfriend somebody, it doesn't notify them.
Oh, that's good.
It doesn't say, hey, somebody just blew you off. No. I mean, when you accept a friend, it notifies them that they've been accepted. And then when you unfriend them, it's silent. It's a silent action.
But And believe me, I know very little about Facebook. Don't you have like a number of how many friends you have at the top of your page?
Yeah.
And if you're really vain, you keep track of that number, and you would notice that it dropped by one or two.
You may. Or I suspect they wouldn't really notice. But if your page is hidden from everybody except your friend, and they go to your page, they'll know they're not a friend because they can't see any of the content. And then they'll figure it out.
Then they'll be upset.
Then they'll figure it out. So
wow.
There you go. Everything you wanted to know about Facebook and IP addresses and all sorts of other stuff here on Tech Talk.
Well, speaking of Facebook, you being the guru of all this stuff are sitting there watching your Facebook wall.
Yes. I'm watching the Facebook wall. And right now, it's like watching molasses flow. I'm not actually seeing much action on the Facebook page, so get there and give us some comments about the show.
Doc, it is Saturday at 9 o'clock in the morning in the summer, so people may be at the beach or asleep, so don't be upset.
It is possible.
Okay. This is Tech Talk. You're listening to us on Federal News Radio, which is heard on these fine radio stations, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to be discussing Rob Glasser. Rob Glasser is founder and CEO of Real Networks, which produces real audio, real video, and real player. That is a way to distribute audio, multimedia over the internet, and they were one of the first providers to do that starting back in the early 90s. Rob Glasser was born January 16th, 1962 in New York City. His father had a printing company, and so he actually had interest in both journalism as well as media because of his father's printing company. Glasser's mother was a psychiatric social worker, and she set up a center for disadvantaged children, and that gave him a sense of strong social responsibility. He felt like we should give back to the poorest of the poor. While growing up, he loved to listen to the radio and to music, kind of a clue as to where he was heading in his life. One summer, his camp counselor, he talked to his camp counselor there at camp, and his counselor told him, he told him that he worked at a college radio station. So after camp was over, he went to the college radio station and watched his counselor work at the show, and he had quite a bit of fun at the station, and he was hooked on radio. So then he started his own radio station while he was still in high school. Probably it was low power, I would think. But he was sort of, really enjoyed the whole concept of radio. When he graduated from high school, he enrolled at Yale, and he earned a Bachelor of Arts and a Master of Arts in Economics, but he was also kind of interested in computers, so he earned a BS in Computer Science. So he got a double bachelor's and then a master's. While at Yale, he set up his second radio station, And he also became one of the editors of the Yale Daily News. So he's kind of a media guy and a radio guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after Yale, he decided not to pursue initially his career in radio, and he joined Microsoft. That was in 1983. He joined Microsoft, and he managed the Microsoft Word team. So he got there right at the beginning. This was, you know, of course, they didn't launch the, you know, this was 83. This was right in the very beginning of Microsoft. So he got some really good stock options there. So he I think he did pretty well. He managed the Microsoft Word team. He went on to become vice president for multimedia and consumer systems. In 1993, after 10 years, he left Microsoft because he wanted to start some new ventures on his own. He left, by the way, as a multimillionaire.
Wow.
Because he had gotten plenty of stock options while he was there at Microsoft. Now, he felt that the internet could be used to deliver a multimedia experience. This goes back to his radio and music days. So he founded Progressive Networks. Now, remember I said that he believed that he should follow his social responsibility? He was what they call a progressive Democrat. And so Progressive Networks was designed to actually deliver, to provide a distribution channel for politically progressive content. So this was in 1995, and he wanted to basically get a sort of a liberal delivery of multimedia audio over the internet. That was the initial goal of the company.
Mm-hmm.
I think he quickly decided that he probably couldn't make much money doing that. So he flipped the goal, and he turned it into a technology company that was going to leverage the internet as an alternative distribution medium for audio broadcasts in general. He changed the name from Progressive Networks in 1997 to Real Networks because I think he was going to go after some real money then.
Ah, I see.
Real Networks then went on to launch its first streaming video in 1997. You know, it's interesting. Real Networks, I've been doing podcasts. I've been doing compressed audio of Tech Talk since the year 2000. And in 2000, all my shows were only compressed in real audio format because people didn't really have MP. You couldn't really stream MP3s then. And it wasn't until about 2005 I started putting both real audio as well as MP3s up for streaming because some people liked the MP3, some people liked real audio. The open source community hated real audio because it was a proprietary format, and MP3 was an open source format.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until 2007 that I just totally dropped the real audio compression and went entirely with MP3.
Is that because you didn't like Rob Glasser very much? I'm just kidding.
No, it's just actually I was hassled by so many open source guys saying, why are you supporting Real Networks? And also because the Real Network servers were so expensive, for me to have streaming real audio on my website, I had to pay an extra $250 a month.
Wow.
To the ISP.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went with MP3, $0
wow.
a month.
Huh?
So I'm thinking, you know, $250 worth of nothing. I think I'll just go with MP3 only. So that was my big choice in 2007. That's kind of a sidebar.
It's a sidebar.
That was a sidebar.
Now
I'm getting back into the real content. According to some accounts, by the year 2000, Real Networks had more than 85% of the streaming content on the internet, and it was in their proprietary format called Real Audio format. Of course, that's when I started doing Tech Talk 2000, and I did Real Audio.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he had an opportunity. Glasser hired a guy called Tony Fadell. Tony Fadell was a guy who This is another sidebar.
Sidebar two.
This falls in the category of lost opportunities. Tony Fadell was a guy that had been trying to create an MP3 audio player, and he had founded a company which failed, and then he founded another company which failed, and so then he came to work for Real Networks, and he proposed to Glasser. He said, "Look, I'm going to make. I'd like to make an MP3 player with a very small hard drive inside of it, and then we could then stream audio from that. We could use that to play songs. We could either do it in the real audio format or the MP3 format, whatever it would be." And so Glasser worked with him for a while, but Tony Fadell, he had a very strong idea of what he wanted to do, and he and Glasser were always fighting with each other. Glasser, by the way, was is sort of known as a yeller.
Great.
He's a screamer. He screams a lot.
Nice.
So after repeated screaming sessions, Tony Fadell quit after only 5 weeks.
Didn't okay, take now him long to figure that out.
Okay, this is the other part of the story. Tony Fadell is and you know where he went? He went to Steve Jobs at Apple.
Oh, of course, the iPhone.
He is the godfather of the iPhone and the iPod.
Oh, gee, you should describe it as something. This sounds a whole lot like the iPod.
It is. And so what happened was Steve Jobs said, okay, I'm not going to yell at Tony Fadell. And, and it turned out that this was a huge turning point for Apple. And so Real Networks could have been.
Boy, did they lose out on that.
They lost out big time. And then, of course, the iPhone and the iPod, that turned into iTunes, and then it was a whole other thing with the distribution of media. It turned out to be a huge initiative for Apple. And you see, Real Audio was really in the position to do that because they were in streaming audio, distribution of audio, and Apple was just making desktop computers. And so you can see just a difference in vision at the CEO level, what it was. So this is a lost opportunity with Tony Fadell.
Wow.
By 2003, Glasser realized that he probably made a mistake. So he wanted to get his own music store. So he went to Listen.com's Rhapsody Music Service, and he bought it. And he renamed it Real Rhapsody.
Ooh.
Real Rhapsody. And that offered streaming music downloads for a monthly fee. He was trying to compete with iTunes. But, of course, he didn't have the iPod. He didn't have the infrastructure. And I don't think it was that wildly successful. Now, despite these successes, problems arose because his business model for Real Networks was to actually sell the servers and then give away the player free. So he had to go to ISPs and sell these servers for a lot of money, and then the ISPs would have to charge their customers a lot. So if I want a streaming Real Audio, I had to pay my ISP $250 a month because he had to pay a lot for the server. And so eventually what was happening, though, is that Microsoft and Apple were giving away audio streaming servers free. Eventually, the quality of the Apple and Microsoft servers became such that they were as good as the Real Network servers, which were very expensive. And then gradually he started losing market share. So he really never captured the market because he didn't understand the market fully. But he's still making money. I mean, he was not wildly successful. He's still making money. In April 6, 2010, Rhapsody was spun off from Real Networks as like a separate company. Now, it turns out that he never forgot his progressive roots. So Glasser backed Al Gore's Air America Radio because this is like perfect. It was progressive radio. It was radio. He loves radio. So he sunk about $10 million into Al Gore's Air America Radio, which would be progressive radio. Ultimately, he lost all of that money when Air America filed for bankruptcy. Since June 2010, Glasser's been a partner in the global venture firm Accel Partners, and they focus on digital media technology, social media, and mobile service investments. Glasser's net worth is now estimated to be $490 million as of 2010.
So he did okay.
He did okay. At the peak, Real Audio was estimated to be worth over $2 billion, over like $2.6 billion. So he's lost quite a bit of net worth because I think Real Networks just took a nosedive. So there you go. The man who started with a progressive background and sort of weaved that through his entire career, progressive background, audio, and radio, all in one package.
I'll think of him actually as the guy who lost out on the iPod.
He's the man, he's the iPod wannabe who didn't really make it because he was the screamer.
Not that $490 million is anything to sneeze at, but imagine what that could have been.
It could have been. By the way, Real Networks is headquartered out at Seattle, Washington. Of course, that's where Microsoft is headquartered. And since he worked at Microsoft, he lived there, so he started it right at Microsoft. And Microsoft and Real Networks are really in a heavily contested competition because Gates didn't like the fact that one of his guys was going against them. Mm-hmm. So they were really pushing streaming media to try to drive Real Networks out of business. So there's a little bad blood there.
I'll bet there is. Yeah. No bad blood here. Doc and I love each other.
Like brothers. That's absolutely.
Exactly. You're listening to Tech Talk, your place to be at 9 o'clock every Saturday morning to learn about technology news. And we'll be right back in just a moment with a pop quiz. So get your pencils and your pads and whatever ready and your brain turned on. And the number to call is 877-936-9333. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. We will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Yes, welcome to the classroom of the airways. And when there's a class, there's a test.
That's right.
And we're going to give a pop quiz today. Those of you that have been taking notes, I hope you'll open up your notebook. This is, by the way, this is an open book test. Open book test. So you can review your notes earlier in the... And if you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you'll win 2 tickets to fine dining at either the Escoffier Dining Room or the Carême Dining Room. One is, of course, at the Falls Church campus, Tyson's Corner campus, and the other one is at the Woodbridge campus of Stratford University. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Rob Glasser. He, of course, founder and CEO of Real Networks. And in the course of his career, he's had many different ventures, but his most recent venture, he invested and actually ultimately lost almost $10 million investing in what particular product?
Thing. Right. Exactly.
Yes. What particular thing? Where did he lose $10 million and what did he invest in?
Now, you can think the answer all you want.
Yes.
But you can't win unless you call us. And the number to do that is 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. For those not paying attention, it is 877-936-9333.
You can also get us on Skype by going to Tech Talk Radio 1. Which is the Skype, our Skype handle, and that call will be forwarded directly to the studio. And we are monitoring the Facebook page. This is a multi-channel effort.
Multimedia.
Multimedia effort. Uh-huh. Yes, indeed. Well, you know, the broadband advertising has been assessed. You know, haven't you ever wondered whether you're really getting the kind of download speeds that the internet service providers
yes.
telling you? Well, the FCC was like skeptical about, you know, because people complain about slow download speeds. They said, well, are they getting what they advertise? So the FCC actually did averages over different times, different time of the week, different time of the day. And they actually said that customers are receiving about 80 to 90% of what the ISPs are advertising, which actually was a surprise to me. I didn't think it would come out that good. The FCC found that the actual sustained download speeds are much closer to the speeds advertised by ISPs than was the case in 2009. So apparently the ISPs have gotten their act together, or maybe they've just improved their infrastructure. Now, sustained speed refers to speeds averaged over a period of several seconds, and the FCC uses this measure because the broadband internet access service is what they call bursty in nature. So it could be very fast and then very slow, so you kind of have to mm-hmm. average it due to network congestion. Now, various factors impact download speed and performance, basically depending on the load, the technology, and the provider. Overall, fiber-based services were faster, cable-based services were next, and DSL-based services were slowest of the three. On average, during peak periods, fiber-to-home services such as Verizon Fios delivered 114% of the advertised speeds, actually faster than Verizon advertised, which is really quite nice to see. The average rating for cable-based services was 93% of the advertised rates, and for DSL, it was 82% of the advertised rates. So DSL scored the worst on this in all things, and probably because the DSL suffered more congestion during the peak periods. I find my peak periods are Saturday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's on there Saturday afternoon, so that's when I really get the slowest time on my Fios connection. Now, the findings for the FCC report were for performance during peak consumer usage from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. local times during weekdays. So they didn't do the Saturday afternoon. They just did it in the evenings during the week. So ISPs, good job. Good advertising, and that's a nice result.
Okay, good. We have somebody on the phone. We have several somebodies on the phone.
Okay.
I know that shocked you. Let's go to line three. This is Mark, who is calling us from Rockville, Maryland. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Doing well, yourself?
Very well, thank you. So, go ahead.
Okay, early in the show, I was talking about Rob Glasser, of course, the CEO and founder of Real Networks. But later in his career, he did one big bad investment. And what did he invest in where he lost $10 million, almost $10
million? That would be Air America.
That is correct.
The right answer. So that Dr. Schertz,
yes,
tell
indeed.
Mark what he has won.
You'll win
won.
Two tickets to fine dining to the Escoffier Dining Room or the Carême Dining Room. Just stay on the line and give your name and address to Andrew, and we'll get those tickets to you get them out to you next week.
Mark, thank you for listening, and thank you for calling. Have you listened to us for long?
Pretty regularly.
Good. Excellent. Well, we're glad you got in. Doc, I'd like to take another call real fast here, can we? One of our
sure.
other listeners. But
yeah.
This guy's calling from a long way away. Mark, you just missed us.
Yeah.
This is Mark from Gloucester, Virginia. Which is down toward Newport News and Virginia Beach. How are you listening to us this morning?
Well, actually, I'm driving through Maryland right now.
And, oh, okay.
Just listen to the radio. And I catch y'all usually, you know, on Saturdays.
Do you come up here frequently? You hear us all the time?
Yeah, I come through here regularly every Saturday. You know, it's a regular route of mine. So.
Great.
Yeah, I listen to you guys.
Well, we appreciate you listening. Thanks
Certainly
a lot,
appreciate
Mark.
It,
okay, all right. We are going to take a break now. I have a curious mind, you know what I mean? So you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by, we'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And the archives have now appointed their first Wikipedian in residence.
Oh, really?
Now, this is the National Archives and Records Administration. You know, these are probably the people that you'd think to be most un-Wikipedia as you could imagine. But
yeah,
they now have an official position, Wikipedian in residence. Now, this new position was designed to serve as a liaison between the archives and the volunteer editors of the free online encyclopedia, Wikipedia. Archive officials say that the new Wikipedian, Dominic McDevitt Parks, will help them collaborate with users and editors of the site to make the government's permanent record holdings available through Wikipedia rather than just through the archive's own site. That is actually pretty innovative thinking. I've got to give the National Archives kudos for that. That's a great idea,
okay.
Wikipedian in residence.
Good.
The infrastructure controls and vulnerabilities were talked about at the Black Hat Conference in Las Vegas this week. It's still going on. Actually, DEF CON's going on today. And Black Hat, this is where they talk about all sorts of security vulnerabilities, security, security fixes. The whole week is dealing with security. And it's so-called white hats. I don't know why they call it a Black Hat conference, but these are all guys who are trying to solve the problem. They're not hackers. And engineers from Red Tiger Security and Fusion X presented a paper about SCADA vulnerabilities. Now, SCADA stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition. These are devices that are used to control things like valves or like switches. So you might have valves in a sewer, sewage plant, or valves in on a hydroelectric dam system,
mm-hmm.
or you might have switches in your power grid. The infrastructure is run by these devices that actually control things. And these SCADA devices are hooked to the internet. Because when somebody wants to control a valve out at Tucson, they don't necessarily want to go to Tucson.
No, why would you want to do that?
They just want to log on to Tucson. They get the IP address for that valve, and they send a signal to that SCADA device, and they open the valve. That's all they do. Now, the problem is a lot of these SCADA devices don't even have passwords.
That's a problem.
So if you know the IP address of that device, you can go in there and you can just open that valve.
I was going to say, you and I can sit around all day and just open up valves all over the place.
And so and it turns out that these devices, when you ping them, they send back data about themselves and they say what they are. Sometimes the data they send back even provides the password. And so these guys use simple Google commands. And they basically started searching around, and they found all kinds of SCADA devices that were there. And once they have the IP address, they can actually get it. Now, what they were trying to do is they were trying to actually, and when they find a vulnerable SCADA device, they would notify the company of the vulnerability. They weren't trying to actually hack in and do anything. They wanted to make it very clear that they're on this side of the law. Now, these SCADA devices, you remember when we had that Stuxnet worm? This is that worm that was used to penetrate the nuclear facilities in Iran. Remember that?
I can't say that it's at the top of my mind, no.
This was the Stuxnet worm, and it was actually somebody, and they're postulating that they could be related to the United States, wrote this worm that ultimately migrated through thumb drives that were taken to the homes of people who worked there, and it went into that installation, and it went in and it controlled SCADA devices within that nuclear power plant. They were actually preparing nuclear fuels, and they were changing how the centrifuges were working, the speed of the centrifuge, and they set the Iranians back a couple of years. So they were going after the same kind of vulnerability there. So these guys were going through that, and they're saying, look, this has actually been a topic which has come up over and over again for the past several years, and people are saying this is probably one of our biggest vulnerabilities. Now, if you would like to find out more about vulnerable SCADA devices, there's a website that actually goes out and it scans the whole internet, and it's got a whole table of them. You go to Shodan. It's called the Shodan site, and that's the website of the week. It features all of the vulnerable devices out there.
Wow.
So you go to ShodanHQ.com, ShodanHQ.com. Shodan is a web service that scans the entire internet for specific services. Could be HTTP, HTTPS, Telnet, SMTP, SSH, FTP, all the services. And it uses all these services which could be used by SCADA devices to communicate with the internet. Sends out a ping, gets back an answer. And then it correlates that answer with other sources of data, such as geographic location, and it gets a complete picture. Now, and then it puts it in a very nice database so you can see what your SCADA device is revealing to the world. Like, for instance, I went to that ShodanHQ.com, and I looked for Cisco devices that were openly accessible. Cisco switches, where the passwords hadn't been set and they were openly accessible. Shodan listed 7,000 Cisco devices that were on the internet that were open,
mm-hmm.
for instance. I mean, that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem.
If that Cisco device is in your network. Now, this particular website, it was made by just a guy, John C. Matherly. He launched Shodan about a year ago, and it became basically a service. Everybody's going to use it. He created an API to this website, application programming interface, so you can actually link to it, and you can automatically see whether any of the devices in your network are being picked up, which would be nice to know. When he launched it, he immediately found, for instance, a SCADA device which was unprotected in the cyclotron at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratories, for instance. Now, they probably wouldn't want somebody going in and changing that.
No.
He found infrastructure level network switches in water treatment facilities. You probably wouldn't want people dumping
probably
raw sewage
not.
Out on the street.
That'd be
so
a bad thing.
That'd be a bad thing.
I don't know much,
thing.
But I know that's bad.
So he's just looking for unprotected or misconfigured SCADA devices, and he's only looking for those devices that actually respond. He sends a ping out, and they send back all their data. Actually, it turns out there are probably many more devices out there that aren't sending back a response but are still unprotected, and they're just trying to protect themselves by obscurity, by simply, if you don't know they're there, then you can't find them. But really, security through obscurity is known not to be very effective in the long haul.
That's a nice slogan. I'm going to have a T-shirt printed that says, security through obscurity.
It doesn't work. Now, the good news, the good news is there are a few simple security precautions that can prevent problems. For instance, use passwords. Use strong passwords.
Mm-hmm.
You remove all default user accounts where the passwords are known. Set up a VPN for remote access. That means you've got a secure communication link. Use properly configured firewalls. Have emergency response procedures in place and constantly test your network and security. And you could log on to Shodan to check whether your systems have been indexed by the system. So there you go. The website of the week ties into the SCADA insecurity problem, and that is Shodan, ShodanHQ.com.
You are listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Wait a minute. First, before we do that, put the headphones back on. Tell us about the Facebook.
We need you to get on the Facebook and make a few comments. I am monitoring the wall religiously, and I'm not getting much of a religious feedback from the Facebook wall, to tell you the truth, at this moment.
I didn't realize this is a religious show. Well, we are religious about the internet and stuff
like
that.
We are, definitely.
So keep listening to us here on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM, HD2, 1035 FM, HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
You're laughing.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. The Department of Homeland Security has developed some software security tools to help their government agencies make certain that they're secure. They're deploying new tools that will help government agencies and private businesses do a better job at making sure their software is secure. They have the Common Weakness Scoring System and the Common Weakness Risk Analysis Framework. These are both intended to let IT organizations set secure software priorities. And instead of trying to tackle every known vulnerability, agencies and businesses will be able to narrow down their biggest risks and sort of prioritize them and do it in kind of a logical way. So this is a very good tool. And as I'm speaking, I just wonder whether it includes a scan for SCADA devices or not. I don't know. This would be an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
The BlackBerry has been trying to get back in the smartphone business. They have released some cell phones based on the BlackBerry 7 operating system. They're trying to actually compete with the Apple iPhone. They're about 4 years late, but they're trying to make a run at it anyway. Now, the BlackBerry 7 operating system is going to be running on the Torch 9860 and the Bold 9900. Now, they're trying to hold on to the corporate market, but they're doing it with a consumer-friendly makeover for the BlackBerry 6 operating system. You see, the problem was, you know, BlackBerry had always focused on the IT guys, and they kind of let the user, you know, just fend for himself. And then they realized the users were buying iPhones and making the corporate guys support their iPhone. So then they decided, maybe we better take a lesson from Apple and support our users. So this is the first attempt to do that. Now, the new Torch 9860 and the Bold 9900 will initially be exclusive to Optus and go on sale in September. They feature a 1.2 gigahertz processor. That was one thing there. It's a faster processor because they're trying to compete with some of the other smartphones. And a new interface powered by Liquid Graphics, which is a great graphics interface. They're going to have a WebKit browser, and they're going to have optimized HTML5 performance, which is almost a prerequisite for any smartphone. Now, they've been quick to push the user-friendliness and improved social networking integration, trying to compete with the other items. And they're trying to make certain that their development package is friendly to developers, so there's some applications could be developed for the BlackBerry. I don't know whether this is going to allow them to compete or not. They're probably still 2 years behind, and it may be too little too late. But at least they're making a run at it. And so that's good. I hope they make it because I like competition in the smartphone business.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice if we had three big ones. We had BlackBerry with the Android, and we'd have the iPhone. We'd have three. It'd probably be better for consumers. Now, AT&T tightens up their password security. Now, AT&T is stepping up protection of its customers' voice messages amid mounting security concerns raised by the phone hacking incidents in the UK. AT&T's policy was announced this week that now the password will be set as the default setting for its cell, for its voicemail boxes. Previously, the default setting was no password. And you know what users do? They just go with the default.
Right.
And so there was just no password.
Security.
Yeah. Now, the new phones will automatically have the settings changed, and beginning early next year, existing customers who upgrade their phones will also be asked to change, and they won't be given a choice. Now, AT&T customers can currently access their voicemail without actually entering a password, which is a practice standard in the industry. See, if they call their voicemail from their cell phone, the voicemail looks at the caller ID on the cell phone and says, oh, I know that caller. It's that caller ID, and then it gives them right through. But there have recently been caller ID spoofing services where you could call somebody's phone number, use the caller ID of the phone number that you're calling. They think you're calling yourself, and it automatically goes to voicemail, and there's no password. So people were able to just get into anybody's account at will just by using these caller ID spoofing services. And this is actually what happened over in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally, I think AT&T saying, okay, maybe we better get on with this thing and require a password. Verizon is the only carrier that mandates a password protection on its customers' voicemail. So Verizon is already on board with good security. I'm glad to see that. Now, the other carriers allow people to directly access their messages, although they strongly suggest using a password. They don't require it. They allow you to opt out of the password. Verizon does not allow you to opt out of the password. You are required to have a password. Now, AT&T said it will still give users an option to opt out of the password. I think that's probably not wise, but they're going to do it anyway.
I think we just keep the show here.
Okay.
We don't have time for another break, so we'll just continue on.
Okay. Now, SpaceX is set to launch to the International Space Station. SpaceX is run by Tesla Motors chief executive and PayPal co-founder Elon Musk. They're looking to launch in November. This will be the second private space flight to the International Space Station. It's one of the first of several launches for this company as part of a 12-flight cargo mission to supply the International Space Station now that the U.S. Space Shuttle program has ended. SpaceX secured a $1.6 billion funding in order to run this mission. Now, NASA's currently engaged in developing an inline disposable space vehicle that would put between 70 and 130 tons of cargo in space. This is a lot cheaper than the shuttle. These rockets are primarily planned for exploration beyond low Earth orbit, but there's plenty of room for the company to handle cargo missions and suborbital travel. There's also room for companies that specialize in space tourism, like Virgin Galactic, mm-hmm. for the low Earth orbit. That's going to be where it's going to go. Virgin Galactic sells tickets for flights and suborbital paths from the Earth for around $200,000. And actually, they've already sold tickets, even though they don't even have the vehicle developed yet. They're developing it.
Isn't that Richard Branson's people?
Yes, that's it, Virgin Galactic. And there are other companies in Russia that sell tickets for orbital flights for around $65 million a ticket. Well, that's a little steep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think so.
SpaceX is one of two companies that NASA's contracted to fly cargo missions to the International Space Station. Now that the shuttle program has ended, NASA's also contracted with the Orbital Sciences to launch cargo missions. Well, that's about it for the show, and certainly do love having Tech Talk here. We want to make certain that you send your emails to us, techtalk@stratford.edu. Make certain to go to techtalkonline.com, and you can download our podcast, or you can find Tech Talk on Apple iTunes. If you go to Apple iTunes, give us a nice rating. We'd love that. Now listen, make certain to go to stratford.edu, and when you talk to Stratford University, tell them that you heard about them on Tech Talk.
And this show replays today at 5 p.m.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
Nationals beat the Rockies last night 5-3. Back on the air here this evening, 7:30 for pregame, 8:10 for the first pitch. Nats and the Rockies on Federal News Radio. It is going to be mostly cloudy today. A good chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Currently outside our studios in Northwest, 79 degrees at 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio.